From WVUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Today in Washington, U.S. Catholic bishops voted overwhelmingly to establish church tribunals for priests accused of sexual abuse. The vote tempers the zero-tolerance policy laid out last summer by the bishops under fire from lay Catholics in Dallas. This hour, On Point, America's Catholic laity struggles to keep its foot in the door of the church. We begin in Washington with perspective on today's vote. Michael Paulson is religion reporter for the Boston Globe and part of the investigative team that broke the priest sex abuse story. I asked him about the bishop's vote and its implications for the church and Catholic laity.
As with the policy in Dallas, the bishops today promise what they call a zero-tolerance policy, that no priest who has ever abused a minor can hold a job in ministry. But a lot of the details of how that will take place have changed. The policy was changed to reflect due process rights for priests after there was a lot of concern in the wake of Dallas that priests were not being given basic civil liberties. There are a number of concerns being raised by both lay people and victims groups that the policy adopted today in some way weakens what was done in Dallas. But the bishops were insistent today that they have strengthened their policy and that their resolve to keep abusive priests out of ministry is stronger than ever.
But we've heard this complaint that the policy is now only as strong as the bishops who implement it. And of course, it was bishops' inaction that in many ways led to this crisis. So where does that leave all of us?
I think one of the things you're seeing is that there is very little public trust in the bishops, and they have acknowledged that. So they are saying that they have left themselves no discretion, that every abusive priest will be removed from ministry, that their first priority is protecting children, and a number of groups representing victims and lay people simply don't believe them. And I guess where that leaves us is following what they do rather than what they say over the next several years. We've had several hundred priests removed from ministry over the last few months since this crisis has exploded. And I think over the next few years, we will see how the bishops act in dealing with abusive priests.
Was there any possibility that the bishops would make changes to the Vatican recommendations that are essentially represented in this policy today? Or was it a fait accompli since the word came from Rome?
Yeah, you know, Dom, that's a good question. I think the answer is there really was no possibility of change. After Dallas, the Vatican said that this policy needed to be changed if it was going to be made mandatory, made binding on the bishops of the United States. So four bishops from the U.S. went over to the Vatican and met with four high-ranking officials from the Vatican and negotiated these changes that were approved today. And the Vatican promised that if the bishops would approve these negotiated changes, then the Vatican would give its stamp of approval. So there was a great reluctance to go in and tinker with the language again, because it would have meant another set of negotiations, another meeting in which hundreds of media and all kinds of angry protesters descend on the bishops to talk about sex abuse. And as they said over and over again today, they're hoping they can move forward.
What was the mood in Washington? The earlier meeting in Dallas had a lot of emotion, a lot of fireworks. How have things been in Washington? Cordial? Tense?
Well, I would say it's less tense and somewhat less circus-like than it was in Dallas. There are somewhat fewer media here, say 300 reporters compared to about 700 in Dallas, and there are fewer protesters. The bishops seem to have adopted a slightly more self-confident tone that was set by their president, Wilton Gregory, who's the Bishop of Belleville, Illinois, on Monday, when he focused his remarks not on expressing compassion for victims, but on expressing concern about the motivation of some groups that seem to be excessively enthusiastic about this crisis. He suggested that there are some groups that are using this crisis to advance their own ideological agendas, namely to change the church's teachings on issues like the ordination of women or abortion rights. So there's somewhat of a more defensive posture, and I think there's also a certain desire that's articulated over and over by bishops here to move on to discuss other issues.
The bishops have done that. They've come out talking about war with Iraq, against war with Iraq, I guess. How about the moral standing of these church leaders? Is there a sense that through all of this sex abuse scandal, they have lost some of their moral high ground?
Yeah, it's funny. I just came from a news conference at which Cardinal George from Chicago was talking, and he was admonishing the news media about its responsibility to get things right. And in saying that, he said, frankly, I now have less credibility than you do. So it's up to you to make sure that what happens here is reflected accurately. I think there is a sense that the bishops individually and collectively have been seriously diminished by this crisis, and they are aware of that, and they are very concerned about that because, of course, the church has a number of missions, ministries that are very important. One of them is speaking out on issues of morality in the U.S. and in the world, and today they were discussing the possibility of war on Iraq. Ordinarily, that would be an expected thing for the bishops to do, to be talking about what their position is on a possible military conflict. But their voice on moral issues has been reduced over the last 10 months because of the focus on the sexual abuse of children.
There were, again, a lot of lay Catholics at this meeting. Bishop Gregory condemned some as false prophets. What was the interaction you saw between representatives of a kind of empowered and angry laity and the bishops? Did they interact?
Not in any formal way. You will remember that in Dallas, victims were invited to speak to the bishops, and a number of lay intellectuals, including Scott Appleby of Notre Dame, were invited to testify before the bishops. At this meeting, the only people participating formally are the bishops themselves. The lay groups, such as Voice of the Faithful and a variety of others, are present, but they are present mostly on the sidelines. They are sitting in the hotel lobby, pigeonholing reporters and bishops when they can. There are a number of informal interactions going on, but there is no formal occasion for them to talk with the bishops as a group.
So what's your sense of where that dynamic is headed? Have the lay groups been sidelined, or are they still representing a potent enough body of concern in the Catholic Church that there's a collision course laid out here?
Well, I guess the collision is underway, and I don't think that these lay groups go away. I do think that the bishops have made it clear that they are not about the business of fundamentally changing the way that the church is structured. One of the changes they made in their policy today is to emphasize the point that the lay review boards that will look at allegations against priests are purely advisory, that they don't actually have real power, and that the real power remains with bishops. But I do think that lay people have been energized, and this is lay people who are in the center of church life, not lay people on the margins, and that sense of new interest in concerns about the church is not going to go away. And I think many bishops are changing the way that they interact with lay people. Even in Boston, Cardinal Law, who initially was very reluctant to interact with Voice of the Faithful, said he wouldn't take money from them, has never spoken with their leaders. He has now said that he is going to reconsider his position on taking money from them, and he's going to meet with their leadership during Thanksgiving week. So you can see some increasing desire to show that bishops are willing to interact with lay people as important parts of the church.
Michael, the turmoil around the sex scandal has been an incredible saga. Is this crisis now over? Are we back to something more like normalcy or a new kind of normalcy in the Catholic Church?
I don't think this crisis is over. This has been a huge event in the life of the church. There are a number of cases that are still being litigated. There are settlement talks going on. There are a number of bishops who have been seriously damaged in terms of the way they're viewed by the public. And there's been damage to people's trust in a central institution in their lives. I think it's going to take a lot of time for lay people, priests, and bishops to sort all that out. I do think the church engages in a more visible way on other issues, but I think that this issue remains front and center for some time.
Michael Paulson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Michael Paulson is religion reporter for the Boston Globe and co-author of Betrayal, The Crisis in the Catholic Church. He spoke to me earlier today from the U.S. Bishops' Conference in Washington. Within minutes of the bishops' vote today, lay Catholic groups were voicing their disappointment. Since the priest sex abuse scandal became public, angry lay Catholics have become a force to be reckoned with. Meeting in living rooms and church basements, they've waged a battle from inside against clerical secrecy and privilege in their own church. They've demanded a new voice and a new role, and at times seem to have been heard by the media, by the masses, even by Rome, but only to a point. So now what? Where does this powerful new lay lobby go from here? Can an age-old balance of power be changed? Is the Catholic Church telling lay Catholics to sit down and be quiet? And if the sex abuse scandal doesn't blow the church wide open, what will? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me tonight is Susan Troy, a founding member of Voice of the Faithful, a national organization of practicing lay Catholics formed in response to the clergy sex abuse crisis. She attended this week's Bishops' Conference in Washington. Good evening and welcome, Susan Troy.
Good evening.
Thanks so much for being with us, Susan. You've just come back from Washington. You saw what's going on there. You saw the policy that came out of this bishops' meeting as one representative of a lay Catholic group in attendance there. What's your conclusion? Is this what the church needed? Is it what your group asked for?
Well, certainly not what we asked for. I'm not sure it's what the church needs. We would have been more pleased to have seen a full implementation of the Dallas Charter that the U.S. bishops promulgated in June.
Uh-huh.
What has happened is a diminution from that original charter. We had hoped, we had asked for them to revise the revised norms, but they have accepted the norms that were part of the mixed commission in Rome. And certain things are missing. We're very disappointed that that the statute of limitations, we asked for that to be not to be dismissed.
This is that a victim would have to speak up by age 28, I think.
Yes, exactly. And we've learned from the victims themselves, I think we're all becoming more aware that speaking up doesn't happen immediately. Speaking up doesn't happen for maybe 20 or 30 years. So in matters of sexual abuse cases, we don't think there should be a statute of limitations in any church document or administrative document.
And what about the openness of the process to lay observation or oversight, Susan Troy, that the bishops were saying today that this is a strong policy. No priest who has ever abused a child will be able to participate in ministry. That sounds strong.
It sounds strong, but it is not in the documentation. The bishops are asking us to rely on much of their discretionary power, which they can use, and we would like them to use it to sort of reinstate some of the things that are missing from that were in the Dallas Charter. And they say they can dismiss a priest, but again, there is no lay review board. It is called confidential and consultative.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a lay review board with any authority to speak. There's no survivor victim on the lay review board. We think these things are very necessary, and we would have liked to have seen them.
Susan Troy, there's really more that Voice of the Faithful and other lay groups are asking for. Fundamentally, it comes down to a basic change in the way the church is run and overseen, doesn't it? You want laity to be right in the heart of how things are run, about how clergy is reviewed and watched.
Well, exactly what we've said all along. We want a voice. But we're not asking for change. One of our goals is structural change, and that has been sort of controversial. They're like, you want to change dogma and doctrine. That couldn't be further from the truth. What we're talking about, for the most part, are things that have been, since Vatican II, have been called for, a greater lay involvement at every level of church administration, and very often this has not happened. There are calls to be a parish councils in every parish. They don't exist in many parishes. We can start there. We want to see laity where laity has already been called to belong to.
Do you believe the church will ultimately be healed without greater lay participation?
No. I don't think that's going to happen.
It's worked for a lot of centuries without it.
Well, we also have a crisis of this magnitude. I don't think the laity is going to sit back in the pews any longer. I have been with thousands of Catholics. We had a convention in Boston this June. There were 4,000 Catholics there, and they're not going back to the pews and being quiet. This is their church. We love this church. That's why we've stayed. That's what we share in common with the bishops. We accept the authority of the bishops, but we want to participate in our own church.
Susan Troy, stay with us. There's more to talk about here. We are looking tonight at lay Catholics and the pushback from the Catholic Church. Listeners, what do you think? Have U.S. bishops responded to the call for more lay involvement in the Catholic Church? Or is the Catholic Church telling lay Catholics to sit down and be quiet? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
From Boston University.
This is On Point. We're talking tonight about lay Catholics and the pushback from the Catholic Church. U.S. bishops met today in Washington and put their stamp of approval on a new policy covering sexual abuse in the Catholic Church and how it will be handled henceforth. The question is, can the Catholic Church ever accept a vigorous lay hand on the steering wheel? Does it need a lay hand on the steering wheel to keep it driving straight? Does the Church risk a return to secrecy and scandal without more lay oversight? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. I've been talking tonight with Susan Troy, a founding member of Voice of the Faithful, a worldwide organization now of practicing Catholics formed in response to the clergy sexual abuse crisis. And we're joined now by Scott Appleby. He's professor of history and director of the Kushwa Center for the Study of American Catholicism at the University of Notre Dame. Good evening and welcome, Scott Appleby.
Good evening.
Thanks for being with us. Scott Appleby, when the bishops met in Dallas over the summer and so many lay Catholics and victims of sexual abuse met with them, you were one of a tiny handful of people outside the clergy invited to speak to that gathering of bishops, and you said to them, the root of the problem is the lack of accountability on the part of the bishops, which allowed a severe moral failure on the part of some priests and bishops to put the legacy, reputation, and good work of the Church in peril. When you look at the policy that's been enunciated today, voted on and approved, is this sufficient? Is this what's required to bring that accountability to bear?
I'm afraid it's not. I think a few matters that have been settled in Washington still need to be clarified with the laity, particularly the role of the lay boards, both at the diocesan level and also the national board headed by Governor Keating.
How are those to work under the new policy?
Well, I think that's what's not entirely clear. The word that's being used is consultative, and what consultative means is still up for grabs, and who determines what it means and whether it's defined explicitly in the policy itself is not clear to me. And that everything, I think, or a great deal depends upon that, because if consultation means consultation without any authority or without any particular power in the process, then it can very easily be interpreted as a big step back away from the spirit, the tenor, and I think a lot of the language of the meeting in Dallas, which wanted to do whatever was necessary to assure that this would never happen again. If those lay boards are now consultative and without any substantive authority, then the next time, if there is a next time, that there's a scandal or a mistake even on the part of a bishop, then whatever credibility remains will be eroded. I'm concerned about that aspect of it.
And it can all be pulled back into the dark or behind closed doors. Scott Appleby, walk us through the policy or the procedure that will be implemented as a result of the policy decision today, and show us where it varies from what was requested, what was demanded by so many lay Catholics.
The policy, as I understand it, calls for the bishop himself in a diocese to determine the credibility of an accusation. And as I understand it, that's a departure from what was understood in the charter passed in Dallas, that the bishop now has that authority.
So the same, the bishop's a charge of sexual abuse comes in, and the bishop then decides whether or not this is credible before anything gets started.
Before anything else happens. And then the bishop, if he determines that this is a credible accusation, would turn the matter over to a tribunal of priests who would then judge the matter, hear the case, and provide due process for the accused priest.
Would there be any lay involvement at that stage?
Well, that's, I think, remains unclear. There would be a diocesan board that would be composed of laity in large part. Those boards are still intact, which was part of the Charter for the Protection of Children and Young People passed in Dallas. But their precise authority is what I think is unclear. In Dallas and in the Charter, their authority was substantive. That is, they really were part of the process of determining whether this priest, the accused priest, was guilty of the violation and how that should be judged and what the next step should be. They were very much part of that process.
If you, in your position, don't know exactly what that role is now, then there must be some real ambiguity here. But as I listen to you describing it, it sounds as though the decisions on how to handle sex abuse charges are pretty much back in the hands of the people who had them before, the bishops with the discretion to decide, priests, a tribunal of priests with discretion on how to handle the action against an accused priest.
Well, I should say that I don't know, because I've been basing what I know at this point is what the media has reported. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen the document pass today. Furthermore, one of the issues going into this meeting was the fact that there was the original charter passed by the bishops in June, and then a parallel document that the commission composed of four U.S. bishops and four Vatican-appointed bishops prepared. And furthermore, that document referred to very precise terminology in canon law. So one of the things that's happened here is it's not necessarily obfuscation or an mm-hmm. attempt to make things so technical and detailed that there's no clarity. I don't want to charge that because I don't believe it's the case.
All right.
But it's not clear to people yet who will determine under certain circumstances what the authority of the lay boards are. But what I'm getting from the reports of the conversations mm-hmm. and the interpretation of the document is that the laity have a far diminished role than what was expected in Dallas.
Scott Appleby, in the fever pitch of fury and sense of betrayal that was out there earlier this year and over the summer, I think an expectation grew up that, against all odds, a permanent, larger lay role in the life of the Catholic Church would emerge in the United States. Do you see that happening? Is today a defeat for that movement, or is it just a setback? Is it possible that this institution, with all of its centuries of tradition, could ever accept a significant larger role of its own laity?
Well, it has to accept a larger role of the laity in order to continue to function. I think today is probably a setback for those who thought, as a result of this crisis, laity would move into collaborative decision-making roles in a kind of structurally permanent way with the bishops, not in any way to challenge their authority sacramentally or theologically, but to help through administration to help them fulfill their charge to govern the church. The Vatican is far less open to that kind of lay collaboration, and it has spoken, and the bishops have responded. What remains now is for laity to keep up the pressure for the church to find ways to incorporate professionals in law, in finance, in management, lay Catholics who have the interests of the church at heart, to have real authority within the structures of the church, the governance structures. That has to be done now away from the heat of the spotlight in the media, but there has to be kind of an insistent pressure to do this, or we'll return to the status quo ante, which no one wants.
Well, you say it has to do that to survive, but why? It survived for many, many years without that kind of lay role.
Well, let me say, maybe survival is not the question, but thriving pastorally, helping authentic human flourishing. The ministries of the Catholic Church that have been built up over the decades are vast in this country, and they have been for a long time conducted primarily by religious and clergy. So before this crisis ever occurred, the U.S. Church knew that it had to turn more and more to lay leadership in various areas, including lay ministry. There's just not enough priests and sisters to address the diverse Catholic population, plus to meet the public role of the Church, which is enormous. So there already was an awareness that laity had to be more incorporated into the governance of the administration of the church and take more roles ministerially. It's just necessary for the church to conduct its business, to serve people at anywhere near the level that we were accustomed to. So that was not in question, but this crisis has thrown a big curve in that process and the way we think about it. And there is, for those who believe the laity have to have more involvement, more responsibility, again, not to challenge the bishops, but to help them serve the church, mm-hmm. the hope was that this crisis would, in a certain way, say loudly and clearly to everyone, one man governing a diocese, even with a number of assistants, cannot fully be responsible for the whole range of administrative, social service, education, catechesis, formation of seminarians, etc.
All of
we
that.
We need to call laity to help. Mm. And that was and remains the hope. But I think because this is such a high-profile, Vatican-involved situation, that this particular meeting in Washington is a bit of a setback, but it's not decisive, I don't think, if Voice of the Faithful and a kind of whole range of commentators and parishioners continue to demand that the church not shrink from its apostolic mission to serve the country and to serve Catholics, and that means calling on the lady more and more.
Susan Troy, I want to turn to you. You've just come from Washington where the bishops are meeting. Did you, as a lay Catholic and a lay Catholic leader, feel included in the bishops' contemplation and deliberation in Washington, D.C. this week?
No, I can't say I felt included. It's a very interesting situation. The bishops are meeting, and there is no conduit for us to, as lay people, to have an input. As you mentioned, in Dallas, there were people invited to speak, survivors, and Scott was down there, another lay author.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no opportunity here these past 3 days.
Are you afraid that people will go back to their parishes and find that same smooth, closed door?
No, I don't think we're ever going back to the way it was. Voice of the Faithful has been so successful, and our numbers continue to grow, which gives us a clear indication that things have changed. There is no more laity is saying, we do the work, and we want, which Scott just discussed, mm-hmm. we're doing the work of the church, we want to be involved in the administration, and we are not going to sit back. We're going to go forward and vigorously. Our numbers grow. We have 90-plus affiliates throughout the United States, and I haven't heard one voice that sounded less than, I'm in this for the long run. No.
It's been a long time in the making. It'll be a long time in the resolving. Susan Troy, Scott Appleby, stand by. People want to join us. Peter's on the line. Hi, Peter. You're on the air.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Great. Look, we've got lots of earlier examples of lay Catholic people like Luther and Calvin, who had their own distinct voice,
mm-hmm.
which couldn't be contemplated within the church.
Are you suggesting, Peter, that unhappy lay Catholics should leave the church?
I am indeed. I mean, if the church is telling you that they disregard your voice and that they don't understand you, why wouldn't you strike out on your own?
What about changing from inside, Peter? Do you think that's just not in the Roman Catholic tradition? There's no room for that? It's an offense against the church somehow?
I'm not a Catholic. I was raised early on as a Protestant,
mm-hmm.
but I'm trying to cope with the moral issues that people are talking about. And I think what people are saying is, we have a pope who feels that he needs to constantly reassert the authority of the church in his sense, and the bishops need to, and the cardinals need to regard that as the true wisdom.
And they pass it on down. I think we've got it, Peter. Thank you for your call. I want to put it to Scott Appleby. Scott, here's a non-Catholic, a Protestant saying, hey, we discovered how to deal with this centuries ago. You just leave the church and start your own where you can run the show.
Well, that would allow those who say you're not going to have a voice to dictate and determine where the church will be. But Catholics believe that the entire body of the faithful is the church. It's not the hierarchy. In fact, the Catholic Church would look pretty silly if all the laity left. There'd be a number of bishops and priests left around with no one to minister to and no social services.
But is it really all the laity that are so uncomfortable with top-down rule?
I don't think laity are uncomfortable with top-down rule in certain matters at all. I think on matters of doctrine and of faith, mm-hmm. of teaching of the faith, there's not a great deal of discomfort. It's in the areas of what we call administration, governance, relations at various levels of the church, that there's just not a lot of, frankly, a lot of smart thinking on the part of the church leaders. I mean, Catholics are willing to accept episcopal authority, but they're not willing to accept a clandestine, secretive, illegal exercise of that authority. In other words, lady's not asking for that much. And I believe that the bishops are fully awake to that reality now. And you could leave the church, you could go join another church, you could join a very fine Protestant communion, but Catholics believe that part of their mission and identity, the laity believe, is to stay with this Catholic thing and to make sure that it's not teetering over one side toward clericalism or toward the improper exercise of authority in the church.
Scott Appleby, Susan Troy, stand by. I want to welcome to our conversation Bill Thompson. He's National Publications Director for Call to Action, a 25,000-member advocacy group calling for reform in the Catholic Church, a lay Catholic group. He's a former priest as well. Good evening and welcome, Bill Thompson.
Good evening. Glad to be with you.
Thanks for joining us. Bill Thompson, you've said that you sense that despite what you see as some stonewalling now, that the laity is aroused, that the genie is out of the bottle, that things are going to change. But your group does have an agenda that goes beyond simply more lay oversight. Are you the group that Wilton Gregory is talking about, Bishop Gregory, when he talks about false prophets among lay Catholics?
Well, I suspect we are, because we are very forthright in saying that the priesthood ought to be opened up both to women and to married people.
Mm-hmm.
And Wilton Gregory insists that that will never happen, that that is against the teaching of the church. But
is this what the church is afraid of, though, that if they open the door to the laity, that new ideas that fundamentally challenge Catholic order will be brought into play, and there'll be no way to keep order?
Yeah, but that shows a very shallow understanding of church history. And I mean massive changes have taken place from the people, and can take place again. And the bishops are working from a very short time frame.
What do you think this conflict has cost the Catholic Church hierarchy in terms of confidence and respect among the laity?
Well, they've basically lost confidence, and it will be very hard to regain it. And the only way to regain it is not to simply assert that now we are in charge and we have learned our lesson, but to talk to the people, not once, not at one symbolic moment when Scott Appleby and Margaret mm-hmm. Steinfels were allowed to address the Assembly of Bishops in Dallas, but to talk to the lay people in the diocese and in the parish day by day. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've been saying for 25 years, what Voice of the Faithful has been saying since early this year. And that's the only way the bishops are going to get credibility back.
Susan Troy, when you look out at Call to Action, Bill Thompson's group, with its agenda, which does go outside of Catholic teaching, do you see them as positive allies, or does their open advocacy of deep reforms in church teaching mean a problem for you?
Oh, I can't say it would be a problem for us. No, we're separate organizations, but we're two organizations that both love the church. We have said that our focus is very single. It is going to be about voice, and we are a body of very mainstream Catholics, and we are very comfortable in that, and we are growing at a great rate, and find other people are very comfortable with our mission and our goals. So, no, I find us complimentary, perhaps.
And, Bill Thompson, we've just got 30 seconds before the break, but what's your level of optimism at this point? Do you expect to see the kinds of changes, the kind of raised laity role in the church that's being sought here in your lifetime, in the lifetime of your children?
Absolutely. I don't think there's any question that the lay voice will prevail, and it's going to happen because of the money, because lay people are voting with their pocketbook, because lay people are doing the vast majority of ministry, because 82% of parish ministers in all levels across this country are lay people, most of them women, and without them, the bishops have no church.
Bill Thompson, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Bill Thompson is National Publications Director for Call to Action, a Catholic lay group. We're talking tonight about lay Catholics and the pushback from the church Catholics. Do you feel you have a voice in your church? And would greater lay power somehow be harmful to the mission of the Catholic Church? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about lay Catholics and the pushback from the Catholic Church. Question for you is, what makes this faith, this church, so resistant to lay oversight? And if the enormous sex scandal of the last year doesn't blow the church open, will anything ever do it? What price does the church pay for so concentrating power? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. We're joined tonight by Scott Appleby, a scholar and professor at University of Notre Dame, who addressed the meeting of the bishops this summer in Dallas in a rare opportunity where lay Catholics spoke up very strongly to the U.S. Catholic bishops, and also by Susan Troy, a founding member of the lay Catholic group Voice of the Faithful. You can join us as well. Clint is calling from Dubuque, Iowa. Hi, Clint. You're on the air. Hello, Clint. Are you there?
Clint, are you with us? No, maybe Clint's moved on. Let's take another call. Tom is on the line. Hello, Tom. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, Tom. You're on.
Yes. Thank you.
Sure.
My inquiry may be a type of non sequitur, but I've been almost enraged. I say almost.
Mm-hmm.
Enraged by the stance of Bernard Law in the last couple of days, taking up a moral tone about the Iraq question.
This is the Boston Cardinal who's been at the...
Yes, and selective amnesia about what has transpired over the last two to 20 years.
Why are you unhappy about a Catholic leader taking a moral position on war?
Because he didn't take a stance on the other thing. It's almost a type of cunning.
A way of deflecting attention.
Deflecting attention, exactly. You know, and to hell with the laity. We do have concern for the world, so we'll go on and ask these questions about the Iraq question.
Let me put it to our guest, and thank you for your call, Tom. Scott Appleby, there it is, a very skeptical view of a Catholic leader's position on an important moral question because of the sex abuse scandal.
Yeah, this is one of the most damaging aspects of this sexual abuse crisis, that the Catholic bishops who in the past have spoken out forcefully and with some moral authority,
yes,
on issues of war, now their credibility is at an all-time low, and it does look unseemly. I understand that the caller's reaction for Cardinal Law, who has... concealed and failed to be transparent and to talk honestly and openly about this major moral crisis in the church, now to turn around and speak about other moral issues. It's unfortunate for the church, I have to say frankly, that he's in that position, that he happens to chair the committee, so it's his role and his duty and obligation to speak about the war in Iraq. He's not usurping someone else's role or standing up, and I'm sure he's aware of the potential to be viewed as a hypocrite, but it really hurts the church. The bishop's credibility is very low now.
There have been such calls strong calls for his resignation. To have him out front speaking about the war almost seems like a church embrace, saying, forget about it. This man is going to stay in his position. Do you read that into it, Scott Appleby?
I think in the U.S. Catholic case, it's less an embrace of Cardinal Law than a reluctance to do anything dramatic to displace him. I think there's still very much in the church, even after this year, a kind of a natural reluctance to cause any kind of friction or embarrass the church. And to force Cardinal Law to step down from that position would cause a kind of internal controversy and call attention to problems within the church itself. It's a pity, I think, that Cardinal Law wouldn't have resigned from that position as a way of making it more effective.
But if he hasn't resigned from that position, and if he hasn't resigned or stepped down overall from his powerful position in the Catholic Church after all this criticism, what does that mean? Does it mean he'll never do it if he hasn't done it now?
I don't think he's going to resign anytime soon. Certainly, I don't think he'll ever resign. That seems to be clear at this point. There were some people earlier who thought that he was riding out the wave and would resign when things quieted down. But I think he believes that he will be forgiven and that he'll continue to govern effectively in Boston. And if that's the case, I would hope that he and the other bishops demonstrate their own forgiveness of many Catholics and of many Americans in so many areas where we need forgiveness, because it's clear that the leaders of the church need that.
That would be a large example of forgiveness. We're joined now by Mark Serrano. He's a clergy sexual abuse survivor. He's a board member of the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, or SNAP. Good evening and welcome, Mark Serrano.
Thank you, Tom, and good evening to Scott and Susan.
Thanks for being with us. In all the conversation about the balance of power between clergy and laity, we don't want to overlook what set all this off. You were a victim of it, priestly abuse of young Catholics. Just on the merits of the policy adopted by the bishops in Washington today, how do you feel about it, Mark Serrano?
Well, unfortunately, the result of it will be, in practical terms, Tom, that victims will be less likely to report abuse.
Why?
Because they're discouraged to. There's less incentive to. There's a 10-year statute of limitations that's being applied to cases.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, bishops now hold discretion over these cases like they always have.
So are you afraid you'll be back in the situation where you go to the bishop, you say this has happened, and the bishop says, well, get over it?
Well, possibly. I mean, absolutely. Look, their discretion is what put us in this position, and clerical authority that was unchecked. And they've provided us a lot of comforting words this week about how, oh, no, we're going to report every case and that sort of thing. But really, this policy doesn't require that. And on top of it, there's really no penalty to be paid for any bishop who doesn't apply this plan. And that's the strengthening of a clerical authority. So,
but that's what you've got at this point, Mark Serrano. Where does that leave you in terms of your relationship as a victim of sexual abuse with the Catholic Church? This is the answer from the Church.
Yeah, well, no, it's an excellent point, is that because the bishops have effectively codified this void in moral leadership today, I think that void can very well be filled by the laity. I think that what's got to happen is survivors of clergy abuse have got to step forward and speak out. We've got to get the laity to join with us and speak out more forcefully. And the people we can work with are legislators who can help us to toughen statute of limitations laws or eliminate them in every state, and prosecutors to help them to better enforce the laws. Those are the ones we need to work with now.
So you're looking outside the church. You're looking there to civil law enforcement. Mark Serrano, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Mark Serrano is with the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. Clint is calling from Dubuque, Iowa. Clint, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, welcome. Glad we got you.
Hello from the Midwest.
Good to have you.
Listen, great points are being made and being discussed at this time, and I do believe God is working all things out for his good and his purpose. My point is that the leaders aren't holding to biblical standards as the early church did. It seems like everyone's doing what's right in his own eyes. And in Scripture, we have loads of examples of what happens when things go that route.
Clint, are you Catholic?
I am a former Catholic, and I left the church for that very reason, that I saw the folly in all that.
Do you think that the Catholic laity can stand up and change the problem that you see?
Okay, the second point I want to bring up, that's a very good question. Scripture, as I read it in the book of Peter, you know, everybody knows Peter, he states that there's no division between clergy and laity. He says we're a priesthood of all believers, so we all have a role. We all are to serve in that respect. We're to know our spiritual gifts and what they are. We're not to usurp authority, because there is definite authority in the church, but we are all to be doing the work of clergy and laity.
Clint, we've got it. Thanks very much for your call. Scott Appleby, I keep coming back to this, but is there in the Catholic Church a fear that if you let the laity get too engaged, too empowered, even at the bottom rung of the church, eventually what you have is a Protestantized church, that there's a kind of inevitable process that then kicks in?
There's no question about that, that's a fear among some of the bishops and many conservative Catholics, that the U.S. Catholic Church has already become too Protestantized, too much focused on the individual, and that the culture in the United States in general lends itself to a radical individualism. And there's that's why the underlying crisis here, beneath the terrible sexual abuse, is a crisis of trust, both the hierarchy and clergy's trust of the laity and vice versa. There, I think among some, not all, certainly not all priests and certainly not all bishops, but among a sizable minority, I believe there's probably an attitude that, and there's some, one can understand the attitude, I think, but the attitude is this culture is so godless, so materialistic, so hedonistic, so saturated with sex and so forth, that unless you're spending most of your time in prayer and in priestly things and the things of Christianity, that is, if you're just a lay person working out in the world, you may not even know it, but you're already given over in some part of your life and your sensibility to that culture. And so there's a natural fear that laity will bring to positions of administration, governments, or even ministry, a kind of compromise with the culture that the guardians of the faith, as they see themselves, won't welcome.
Susan Troy, there you are, seen as a potential corrupting influence on the church. If this scandal hasn't cracked the church open to Voice of the Faithful and others, what will it take, Susan?
I think we're still in process. I think we're going forward. I think the laity is not going to go back and be quiet. I think that when voices are raised, things will change. I have to believe in that. There's an amazing spirit about this whole movement, and it is the faith reinvigorated, the love of church. We're talking, you know, people, everyday Catholics are talking about their faith, and they're talking openly to each other and saying,
I love the church, and then starting looking inside and saying, I didn't realize how deeply I love the church.
Susan Troy, we've got to go, but we hear your hope and your optimism even today, and we appreciate it. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Susan Troy is a founding member of Voice of the Faithful, and Scott Appleby, it's been great having you tonight. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Scott Appleby is professor of history at the University of Notre Dame. In a moment, Iraq agrees to accept UN weapons inspectors. This is On Point. Saddam Hussein met the first deadline of the UN resolution designed to disarm Iraq today. Iraq's ambassador to the United Nations, Mohammed al-Duri, delivered a letter to Secretary General Kofi Annan's office stating Iraqi willingness to receive UN inspectors. A team of inspectors is scheduled to leave for Iraq on Monday. After the announcement, al-Duri held a short press conference to broadcast the Iraqi government's compliance with the resolution.
I did deliver the letter to the office of the Secretary General. The Secretary General is not here, so I delivered it to the to Mr. Akbar Rutha. Yes, right now.
Can you tell me the length of the urgent?
Well, I can give you the essence of that letter. The letter saying that Iraq will deal with the Security Council Resolution 1441 despite its bad contents. We are prepared to receive the inspectors within the assigned timetable. We are eager to see them perform their duties in accordance with international law as soon as possible. This is the essence of the letter.
Can you describe what the bad contents are?
Well, the other one, I think we explained in the letter the whole Iraqi question dealt with here within the United Nations. Activities. So we try to explain our position, saying that Iraq have and had not and will not have any mass destruction weapons. So we are not worried about the inspectors when they will be back in the country.
So did you repeat that assertion in the letter that Iraq has no weapons of mass destruction?
Yeah. Iraq is clean, yes. Yes.
Why did you decide to accept now? How do you describe what made Iraq make this decision now?
Well, this is the government of Iraq decided it, and they decided right now because they think that it is the proper time, the right time to give the answer right now.
So you said this was a decision of war and peace. Are you confident now that your government has achieved peace for you?
As far as Iraqi government concerned, yes. We are always opting for the path of peace.
If I could, what impact did the Security Council resolution threaten serious consequences and bluster in Washington? What impact did that have on Iraq in making this decision to reallow weapons inspectors?
Well, I just say that we choose always the peaceful ways and means, and this is a part of our policy vis-a-vis to protect our country, to protect our nation, to protect the region also from the threat of war, which is real, and everybody knows about it. What does that mean, the threat, the American threat against Iraq?
Iraq's ambassador to the United Nations, Mohammed al-Duri, speaking today after delivering a letter to Kofi Annan's office that expressed Iraq's willingness to accept UN weapons inspectors. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Sets and CDs of On Point are available for $15. Go to onpointradio.org or call 1-800-909-9287.
This is WBUR. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Gregorio.